from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. Today, we're going to talk about how better sleep and Tai Chi reduces inflammation and promotes health, University of California. And in preventing the winter blues, or the blues at any time of year, talk outshines the light. Now, this is really surprising because we know that people that live where there's more sunlight have less of the sad, and that's a that's affecting a lot of individuals with the type of depression that occurs when people don't have normal amount of sunlight. However, they finally put it to the test and found that a lot of people getting the light therapy relapse back into the seasonal affective disorder SAD, whereas when people had talk, they didn't. So talking means something. I'll give you my perspective on that. A very interesting study from the University of Rochester Medical Center, published in the Journal of Neuroinflammation, shows that the brain's own immune system could be harnessed to fight Alzheimer's. Now, that's very important when you consider how many people have a full diagnosis of Alzheimer's, over 5 million, but how many have dementia and Alzheimer's, but at the early stages and are not diagnosed, probably 10 million beyond that. So you're dealing with 15 million people could benefit. But where they're looking at specific mouse models in an actual laboratory, we've actually reversed Alzheimer's. So we'll tell you how that's done. Also, reducing cholesterol with two foods. I'll tell you which two foods, based upon the National Polytech Institute, were shown to reduce cholesterol. And a lot of men are watching these ads for what are called masculinity drinks, the energy drinks. And University of Akron gives some insight on that. How masculine are they? Plus, also today, I'm going to have another in an ongoing series of brief discussions. And this is by a person who worked at the Pentagon, was there that day, just turned on their computer, and the moment their computer went on, boom. It's like a bomb went off. And they climbed out of the debris. They had their kid with her. And they tell you what they saw and didn't see. And one more piece of the puzzle. We've got to get a lot of pieces together. But what they didn't see was in the airplane. No baggage, no luggage, no seats, things that would not have dissolved, that are there with every single plane crash in history. It's always debris. Why? Zero debris. No fuselage, no tails, no wings, no indentation in the building where it went in. So what does that mean? Also today, all of us who are school teachers, and I've been a teacher for a long time, all the teachers I speak with at high school or college will tell you the same thing, that the majority of the students coming from into our school system today are not getting the education they deserve and need to create the dynamic intellects that are necessary to solve problems in the world. But there's a whole lot of students coming in on these special visas, and they had that education. And they're highly critical thinkers. They're problem solvers. And they're coming in by the millions, and they're displacing Americans. Now, these are people who've already got their PhDs. These are people that are very skilled. They're from very low-paying countries, India, China, South Korea, and they're taking American jobs. So we better understand that there's a whole lot that we have to change in our public system. I'll play you an audio clip on that. Also, Fox News has been doing something on a regular basis that it shouldn't. It's been misrepresenting demonstrations in Russia. Oh, look at the people. 100,000 people out there in the streets protesting. burning things because they're opposed to the government of Russia and their austerity program. Hold on. Look in the background. Tighten up on that sign. That's Greece. Those are Greek demonstrators, not in Russia. How could you make that mistake? You couldn't. That couldn't be an innocent mistake because it's being made repeatedly, demonizing Russia. And because of it's part of the current talking points of geopolitics. Now, you think that it's not possible to give the media talking points and have them repeat it verbatim? Then I have a little piece, 60 seconds, that shows you that every single one of the media in America reported the story with the same identical word. Now, what is the possibility that every single media reporting on a story would not only report it the same, but actually use the same identical language, word for word? But it's not happening in the country you're saying it isn't, showing pictures of it. What happens when you're, and guess who told Fox that they were wrong? People living in Russia, watching Fox. They said, this isn't happening here. And by the way, to give you an idea, go to Syria and ask the people living in Syria, living in the non-occupied area of Syria, what do you think of living here? Who's doing the killing? Who used the chemical gas? It wasn't Assad. It was the so-called moderate beheading, crucifying, blow everyone up terrorists that we fully support with Saudi Arabia and Turkey and Qatar and the other racist states in the Middle East. They're all racist in the Middle East, especially Saudi Arabia, sexist, misogynist, Wahhabist, terrorist to the core, from the beginning to the end of their entire political system. It is a theocracy and a monarchy, but the monarchy can only exist because it supports the theocracy, Wahhabism. Why isn't that discussed? Why isn't it talked about? So we have a lot to share today. Let's begin. We always begin with something that everybody can agree with. We should be living longer and healthier lives. And if you doubt me, look at the latest statistics on how many Caucasian women are dying sooner today, much earlier than in the past. So we have reversed that whole curve towards longevity, and women are living, not only they're sicker, they're more overweight, they have more depression, they have more inflammatory conditions, they have more pain, they have more heart attacks, more strokes, more cancers than ever before. Ever before. So please pay attention to this. Now, if you're a very healthy person and you're doing things the way they should be done, you won't notice this. But the statistics are looking at all women, not just those who are doing it right. And one of the things we're not doing right, we're not getting a good night's sleep. Now, according to the University of California, when you have anything that's inflammatory, you need that. That's important if you've been injured, because that's the primary way the body promotes healing after injury. It creates an inflammatory response, so all the things that are needed, fibroblast cells, they go then, they start weaving your skin back together again. Where you have a gaping sore, it heals it, it brings anti-inflammatories, it brings the body's natural antibiotics there to stop bacteria and viruses from infection. So everything you can do to help then bring down the flame as the healing process occurs, means you don't get damaged throughout the rest of the body. Because if you don't do that, then that same inflammation is going to hurt your heart. It can contribute to strokes, certain cancers, and a lot of medical problems, including diabetic problems. Well, here's what we haven't considered. Stress occurs when we don't have enough sleep, and that contributes to inflammation in the body. So insomnia, one of the most common sleep disorders, is associated with greater risk of depression and death. It's a comorbidity factor. So you're more likely to have a heart attack if you're stressed, more likely to have a stroke if you're stressed, more likely to have diabetes if you're stressed. But if you have depression, which causes sleep disturbances in and of itself, then you increase the stress hormones, and that contributes even more likelihood to having mortality, death. This was published in Biological Psychiatry, and it says that two things, the simple meditation movement, Tai Chi, Tai, T-A-I, Chi, C-H-I, plus sleep, good sleep, improves cognitive behavior and turns off inflammation. Quote, behavioral interventions that target sleep-reduced inflammation and represent a third pillar, along with diet and physical activity, to promote health and possibly reduce the risk of age-related morbidities, including depression. So when you're getting a good night's sleep, now how can you get a better night's sleep? Well, there are several ways you can do it, because it's an epidemic in our society. The five things that I find are most likely to cause a person to not be able to sleep. First, don't take your problems to bed with you. And how do you not do that? Because we all have different issues we're trying to deal with on a regular basis, and we can't resolve them all. And when we're finally away from the phone calls and people and work, and we just are laying there in bed, they're the first thing that come up in our mind. So what you do is this. It's a simple thing I taught myself. At the end of a day, about an hour before I go to bed, I sit down with my pad and I start writing out two things. What do I need to resolve? And therefore make an outline of how I could go about resolving it, each step of it. And then I put it on a timeline. All right, how long a period reasonably will this take to resolve this? And then next, I put down, what have I resolved? Because we frequently don't look at the good things that we do in our lives, what we actually accomplish that are important to us. So then I put down, here are the things I've accomplished in the last week that I should feel very good about. I write that down. I was able to do a 7-day juice fast. Okay, put it down. That's very good. Cleansing, getting about 13 to 15 glasses of juice a day, making sure you get your liquefied protein in there and your fibers, your full spectrum of all your berries and greens, so your body is really healing. And you thought, wow, I feel much better. My body's cleaner. My cells are rejuvenating. So put it down. Take credit for the good that you've done. Then, how you've been able to express yourself with people where you've made your point, but also you did not need to be offensive in the process of making it, or retaliatory or threatening in any way. You just put it on the line. Tell it straight. You don't have to sugarcoat it. You know, the world is becoming overwhelmed with cupcakes that unless you put icing on everything, they tend to emotionally drool. So instead, just say, here's what I want to share with you. Here's how it impacted me. Here's how I felt about what you did or said. And just tell it to them. Let them handle it from there or not. But at least you've presented it. You've let them know the problem. And you let them know how you felt, but you don't have to take it further. There's no need for punishment, no need for harsh accusation. There's no need to go beyond that. Also, let's say that you've done something creative that you've been wanting to do. Put it down. How you feel about being able to do something, maybe learn a language, maybe learn some new words to expand your vocabulary, maybe new some new techniques. Maybe listen to a different type of music. For the last week, I've been listening to almost exclusively rhythm and blues from the Delta. I love Delta blues. In fact, every year I make sure on my travels I go down to New Orleans to go out into the bayous, to go through the French Quarter, and just to listen to some of the most unique, original, and some of the oldest music in America. If you don't break the habit you have and learn something different or expose yourself to something different, you won't appreciate it. But when you do, you appreciate it. So that's something new. Put it down. So all the good things you've done, write them down. Then look at them. That allows you to feel relaxed. It allows you to feel the feel-good hormones start to be secreted, and that's good. Now, so you've written out your problems, so you're not taking them to bed because you're seeing how you're going to deal with them tomorrow. I'm going to deal with this, next day that. And I should be able to deal with this in a reasonable period of time. Then take yourself a nice hot bath, and if need be, put about 10 drops of lavender oil in the bath water. If you don't want to put it in the bath water, put it on your pillow. Either way, it works. About 3 drops of lavender oil on your pillow help you get a better night's sleep. Also, you can have a nice just if you're hungry, have some cold lemon water, a small amount, maybe 2 ounces. And that kills the appetite immediately. Cold water with lemon in it. And then if you really are feeling a little antsy, maybe a little, still a little anxious, then have yourself some theanine, T-H-E-O-I-N-I-N-E, 200 milligrams, and about 1,000 milligrams of magnesium from citrate. That will relax you also. Turn off the lights, all the lights. If you still have some light in the room or outside, you can't control, just put on one of those little, you know, light diffusers. So they're made out of satin or cotton, and they're lightweight, and you put it over your eyes. Put in some earplugs if you've got noise that bothers you, and make sure that you have no cell phones or electrical magnetic fields on, like a computer. Unplug it. Turn it off. That's how you get a good night's sleep. But now they're saying to also do some Tai Chi. That will make a difference as well. Now, the benefit of that is you're going to strengthen your immune system. You're going to have less opportunity for disease, and that's good. Now, another study from the University of Vermont says, quote, talk outshines light in keeping the winter blues at bay. But this could be year-round. This is public, the American Journal of Psychiatry. And what they're showing is a lot of people suffer from SAD, or seasonal affective disorder, and it's it affects over 10 million people, and they found that a lot of people using the light therapy, temporarily they benefit, but then they relapse back. Whereas when you have talking, when you're talking about the issues that you feel depressed about, you're more likely to benefit, and it sustains itself. So if you feel that you have some depression at any level, my suggestion is that have someone that you respect, have someone that is a good listener, have someone that will not judge you, but rather try to understand you and give you some input that is constructive, not critical, and talk with them, because that works better than light therapy. And we didn't know this, now we do. University of Rochester has an article published in the Journal of Neuroinflammation. Quote, a new study suggests that the brain's immune system could potentially be harnessed to help clear the amyloid plaques that are a hallmark of Alzheimer's disease. This research confirms earlier observation that when activated to fight inflammation, the brain's immune system plays a role in the removal of amyloid beta. And we have also demonstrated that the immune system can be manipulated in a manner to accelerate this process, potentially pointing to a new therapeutic approach to Alzheimer's disease, end quote. All right, now, we've known for a long time that the mechanisms by which the plaques are being removed in the brain, no one knew. But they knew that it was. And eventually, it had to come from the microglia, micro, M-I-C-R-O, glia, G-I-L-A. These are native cells that serve as one of the central nervous system's first lines of defense against infection and injury. And the microglia are present throughout the brain and spinal cord and are constantly monitoring their environment and can be switched on or activated to perform different functions such as control inflammation, destroy pathogens, clean up the debris from dead or damaged cells, and seal off the injury if there's a site where you've had injury. And so that's where they found this, that it was in the microglia, and therefore they could manipulate the activation of this anti-inflammatory process. Well, that's good, and I'm glad that they did that, and that will get out to the rest of the scientific community. And in 10, 15 years from now, doctors will actually have enough data that they'll be able to make some suggestions, such as, why don't you have a serving of blueberries? Why don't you take some green chlorophyll foods in your diet each day, like chlorella or spirulina or wheatgrass or barley grass or kamut? Because those phytonutrients and those chlorophylls can pass the blood-brain barrier and actually stimulate the microglia in a healthy way by turning on the anti-inflammatory mechanism and hence helping to clean up or chelate out the plaque, because ultimately that's what does it. You see, when you've helped as many people who've had brain conditions to reverse Parkinson's, and a man named Thomas, this was about 15 years ago, Thomas came to a brain study. At that time, he was a 70-year-old retired engineer, African-American. He had Parkinson's advancing to where he could not hold a fork, couldn't hold a drafting, a pen. He couldn't do anything with his hands. But also his head was shaking, and it made it very difficult for him to concentrate. 6 months, he was as steady as a rock. Not only that, but a side effect, and we didn't know this, he told us, was he had developed what he called acute memory. I said, what is acute memory? It's a term that doesn't exist. He had made it up. And he said, well, I've been finding that I can remember things from my background that long ago I'd forgotten, but I remember it instantly. And I said, well, give me an example. He said, oh, you asked me a question. I said, what year did you graduate from high school? He gave me the year. How many were in your class? He told me the number in his class. Name them. He had the first and last name of every member of his class. Now, if you don't think that's remarkable, that is beyond remarkable. I've never seen anyone in my life who could do that, let alone someone who had graduated, you know, from high school 52 years before. Then when we found that a person had also reversed other conditions, and then we would later do another study 10 years later, where we had major improvements in many conditions and complete reversal of multiple sclerosis in one of our advanced multiple sclerosis persons, Kenny, then they all had the same identical protocol. So what was it? Well, it was working on chelating, meaning a removal of heavy metals out of the body, which stimulates an enormous amount of new enzymes being able to function. But also, you're dealing with microglia. You're turning off inflammation in the brain. And inflammation creates the plaques. So you're stopping what's creating the plaques, the amyloid beta plaques, that are causing dementia, Alzheimer's, and other illnesses. So first you stop the plaques, and that's where everything is alkaline, healing, whole, healthy, lots of raw chlorophyll, phytonutrients. And then you look at which those are, nuts and seeds and oils, healthy juices. The more juices, the better, and certain nutrients. Exercising, you put all that together, and that's exactly what they just were able to understand. They just didn't know what would do it. But now they know it can be done. Now go back to something we've been mentioning rather regularly on the program, and that is your intent, your authentic intent can in and of itself turn on healing in the body. Or the opposite, negativity, turns on disease. Because you block healing. When you block healing, the inevitable outcome is disease. It's inevitable. And so with a lot of people walking around with attitudinal problems, most people, and self-righteous indignation, I'm right, you're wrong, I'm a victim, you're the abuser. That's diseasing. Where you can't get over yourself or your beliefs, not willing to challenge them, that's diseasing. Where you're not able to move emotionally, that's diseasing. So you just start looking at the bits and pieces of our conditioned self, and then you understand why people are getting sick. It's not just virus or bacteria. We all are exposed to virus and bacteria all the time. We have more bacteria in our body than we have cells by the factor of 100. But it's having healthy bacteria from healthy food, healthy juices, having healthy ideas, having healthy attitudes, having healthy beliefs that keep our DNA on, and that turns off inflammation. But if you eat good food but you've got bad intent, you are turning off healing, turning on diseasing. That's what confuses some people. So the idea that the fact that you're eating something healthy doesn't mean that you're going to be healthy in the process if you don't have the right attitude. So all that came from that study. And finally, one last thing today, taking a little extra time for health and healing, but I think it's very important. Two foods based upon the National Polytechnic Institute can reduce cholesterol. What are these two? Soy, non-genetically engineered organic soy, and amaranth. Amara, A-M-A-R, anth, A-N-T-H, amaranth. It's a very ancient heirloom grain, very healthy. They found they could lower cholesterol and prevent osteoporosis. It's inexpensive, both are very cheap, so therefore people on limited incomes can still afford it. So the whole grains, like the whole beans and pulses and legumes, they're easy to get and in your system. And you're getting the B vitamins, you're getting vitamin C and vitamin A, vitamin E, calcium, magnesium, and the omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids. So we have to get those into our systems and complete proteins. And if you're a man, don't think that by taking those energy drinks you're going to be more masculine. You are not. What you are going to be is wired, because you're getting a lot of caffeine and a lot of sugar, neither of which does anything other than pump your adrenaline, exhaust your chi, and completely deplete your adrenal glands. So stay away from the idea that an energy drink makes you like the guys who are advertising them on television, the mountain climbers, the, you know, the boxers, the skiers, and all that. It's all nonsense. We're talking about the things that can make a difference in our lives, always empowering. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Select all this music because I just like to feel good about the music. Hope you enjoy it also. And now let's take a look at some public health issues. This is from Kelly Patricia O'Meara. The FDA is looking to expand electroshock use despite significant risks and no proven benefits. I've counseled several people who've gone through traditional depression therapies that included electroconvulsive therapy or shock therapy. When I asked them, did they ask the doctor for scientific evidence that it would not hurt the brain, they said they were given assurances, but they were given no proof, just assurances. And yet one person ended up not remembering basic life skills. In fact, there was a woman in Texas who was going through a period of depression after a child died, which is completely normal. That's a sense of mourning. And there's no time schedule. There's no rigid way of saying, okay, it's 3 weeks or 3 months or even 3 years. Each person has to come to a point where they say, all right, I've mourned my loss, and now I must go on with my life and do the best I can from here. But there's no psychiatric diagnosis that says you are going to be brain damaged. You have a chemical imbalance, and we're going to have to do something about that. And electroconvulsive therapy will help you. There's virtually no good science showing electroconvulsive therapy helps the brain whatsoever. To the contrary, all of the science shows that you damage the brain. It's to what degree you damage it. In this person's case, after her husband complained that it took her too long to get over her grieving, the psychiatrist recommended electroconvulsive therapy, and so she had a series. Here's the adverse effects. When she came home from the hospital, she had had that part of her memory in her brain erased about self-grooming. She literally had to have a friend come in and show her how to brush her hair, to wash, to brush her teeth. Basic life skills she had forgotten. It had been erased. She couldn't cook. She couldn't clean. She could learn these, and was in the process of doing it, but after 6 months, her husband became frustrated and divorced her. So that is the downside. That can happen and does all the time, where you have parts of your memory erased. Now, that's one aspect of electroconvulsive therapy. So now we have the Food and Drug Administration has initiated a proposal that would reclassify electroconvulsive therapy devices from its highest risk category, number 3, to allow electric shock machines to be utilized in the treatment of specific alleged mental illnesses with less regulatory controls. This is despite the federal agency's admission that ECT, or electroconvulsive therapy devices, have not been proven safe and effective, ever. To date, nearly 5 million Americans have received electroconvulsive therapy treatment without electroconvulsive therapy manufacturers being required to submit valid scientific evidence, such as clinical trials of the device's safety and effectiveness. The proposal has reignited the whole controversy all over again. So that's where we stand on that. So just keep this in mind. If the psychiatrist says to you, electroconvulsive therapy has helped people with depression, what they're not telling you is that it has caused grand mal seizures, literally destroying brain cells permanently, and therefore the memory that was in those brain cells is gone. So therefore, when a person says, do you remember what you were depressed about? And the person says, no, I don't remember. Okay, that's great. No, it's not great. That's like saying I had pain in my finger, so we cut the finger off. Well, you get pain in your other fingers. Yeah, I got another finger pain. Let's cut it off. So to tell someone that because you can't remember what you were depressed about, but we've created seizures, we've destroyed brain cells, we've destroyed important parts of your brain, it's a successful therapy, that is absolutely barbarism. But I just want you to know, in my opinion, you should never, under any circumstances, get electroconvulsive therapy. It is the modern-day bloodletting of medicine. And what exactly is the possible harm? What are the significant risks mentioned by the FDA? Well, here's what the FDA states. All right, there are 14 health risks associated with electroconvulsive therapy that your doctor is unlikely to tell you of any of these. The hospital won't because they're making money off of it. One, death. Death may result from various complications of electroconvulsive therapy, such as reactions to anesthesia, cardiovascular complications, pulmonary complications, or stroke, meaning impairment of blood flow to the brain, or bleeding in the brain. Cardiovascular complications, the induced convulsions may be accompanied by arrhythmias, which is a regular heartbeat or ischemia, infarction, heart attack, hypertension, high blood pressure, and hypotension, low blood pressure. Cognition and memory impairment, specifically immediate post-treatment disorientation and retrograde memory impairment and retrograde personal memory impairment, meaning you simply don't remember your background. So those are just some of the device. Post-physical trauma, manic symptoms, prolonged tardive dyskinesia, meaning you got tics and involuntary facial movements, and worsening of psychiatric symptoms. So the next time someone suggests, oh, electroconvulsive therapy, I heard it works. Yeah, it works for the manufacturers, and it works for the psychiatrists and the hospital, the nurses, the anesthesiologists. It is the worst kind of medical treatment. And that's our public health announcement. Now, we're going to hear about the problem with millennials from a millennial. See if you agree.
If you guys have anyone on your social media, like I do, that's over the age of 40, you've probably seen them post at some point about how much our generation sucks. Well, as a millennial, I took it upon myself to try to evaluate what's so wrong with our generation and why they're so mad at us. And then I pretty much realized that we're just existing. We're not really contributing anything to society. Our generation doesn't have the basic manners that include no ma'am and yes ma'am. We don't even hold the door open for ladies, much less our elders anymore. We listen to really obscene music that degrades women and pretty much glorifies drugs and crime. We start to cuss now to prove a point. We use words like bae to describe someone we love. And we idolize people like Kim Kardashian, and then we shame people like Tim Tebow. We're lazy, we're really entitled, and we want to make a lot of money and have free education, but we're not really willing to put in the work. We spend more time online making friends and less time actually building relationships. And our relationship's appearance on Facebook is more valuable than the foundation that it's actually built on. Our idea of standing up for something we believe in means going on Facebook and posting a status with your opinion. And we believe the number of followers we have reflects who we are as a person. We don't respect our elders. We don't even respect our country. We're stepping on our flag instead of stepping up to volunteer. And we mock the men and women that are fighting for us, but we praise the people that are fighting each other, guys. We're more divided as a country than ever before. And I think our generation actually has a lot to do with that. Everything that used to be frowned upon is now celebrated. Nothing has value in our generation because we take advantage of everything. We have more opportunities to succeed than any of those before us, yet we don't appreciate the opportunities we have now. Now I guess I see why people call us Generation Y. Like, why are we so entitled? Because we don't deserve to be, and we were raised better than this. I think that our generation, I always wonder what we're going to be remembered by, and I, for one, want to break that stereotype and prove that my parents raised me better. Don't you? To all of our elders, I'm sorry. And I do know that we were raised better. Thank you from this millennial for putting up with those and those who do not see wrong in their actions. I hope we start pulling our pants up and actually contributing to the society we love. And maybe make a difference in 2016 so that we can make a difference in the future.
Okay. Well, what do you agree, disagree? I thought it was pretty neat that a millennial would have the insights and the temerity to come forward and state, hey, we're worth saving and we're worth helping, but we got to get over our excesses and ourselves in the process. Good for her. And for all other millennials who are willing to understand, no group is going to have much success at changing the problems of the world if you do not allow the adults in the room as well. And I noticed that down at Occupy Wall Street, which I fully supported. I was there on day one. The trouble is when I was asking all the millennials who were down there protesting, and legitimately so, and I supported them, did they want to know what some of the people from the civil rights movement had done and the women's movement had done and the human rights movement? No, they didn't care. They not only didn't care, they didn't know. So I suggested, you know, there have been a lot of us around this country for a long time who have contributed at different times to major movements. Wouldn't it benefit you to also know some of the techniques, the organizational movement, the political organization and activist movements that have worked? Didn't care, didn't want to know, stay away, you had your day, go home and die. This is our movement. And I saw that. I was there 22 days. I saw it day after day. So, okay. So we weren't invited. We weren't appreciated. We weren't wanted. So a lot of us went home and hoped that they would do well, but they didn't. And so let's hope the millennials this time, whatever they do, allow some people who have experience from the past maybe give some input. This whole idea that one generation is gone, you're irrelevant, go away, that's just not a way to learn and grow. Now let's hear about how Fox News was using news footage from other countries in order to attack Russia. And by the way, it just wasn't some Fox, it was other networks, like CNN. I do not believe personally, in my own personal opinion, this could have been done in just a simple error. They have too many check systems, they have too many fact checkers. Who is behind this, I don't know. But listen in, this is the proof they did it.
Now, news bulletins around the world have been following Russia's election rallies. But one channel stands out. America's Fox News has been showing streets ablaze, violent clashes and firebombs thrown at security officers. But with one major problem, the images are not from Russia, they're from Greece. Marina Portnoy has been watching.
America has its fair share of protests and political dissent to be dealing with. Instead of keeping an eye on the ball, the country's mass media machine has turned to protests in Russia and dropped the ball on reporting the facts. Thousands of protesters have gathered in Moscow, lashing out against Prime Minister Vladimir Putin and his ruling United Russia Party. The only problem is that this video is not from Russia. Fox News Channel aired video of fires and chaos in Athens, convincing viewers that this mayhem is playing out in Moscow. The Fair and Balanced Network paid no mind to the Greek lettering in the background. In case you're wondering, it says Greek National Bank.
What matters is that this is what Moscow protests have looked like.
It's not surprising whatsoever that at the moment that there would be any kind of protest, no matter how small it be in Russia, against the Russian government, that it would be greatly exaggerated in media and used by the U.S. government as well as a way to try to somehow push for a change in Russia that would be more favorable to U.S. interests.
Journalist and author Eva Golinger believes mass media is Washington's most valuable weapon in encouraging revolt elsewhere, under the mantle of spreading democracy, such as the so-called Orange Revolution in Ukraine or Rose Revolution in Georgia.
Perception is created that something is happening in that country that's not right, and that the government is somehow responsible, and so therefore, if that government ends up being removed, it somehow is justified. That you know, the media has played a key role in creating a justification for regime change.
Similar anti-government demonstrators have been reported in at least 50 other cities in Russia.
U.S. leaders have leveled harsh criticism against Russia in the aftermath of Sunday's parliamentary election. And critics say its free press has worked to reinforce the narrative.
The media tends to march in lockstep with the government. It tends to take its cues from the government. It tends to, you know, mobilize its resources to showcase what the government says is true, even when later it turns out not to be true.
As was the case in this erroneous CNN report.
Well, in eastern Russia, more than 3,000 people protested against proposed changes to the country's time zones.
The video shown by CNN is not of protesters, but rather of soccer fans rioting in Moscow over the killing of a fellow supporter.
The problem is that we showed the wrong pictures.
Only after the error was repeatedly noticed, CNN owned up to its mistake.
We do apologize for the error and are grateful to the many Russian viewers who have pointed it out to us.
The sloppiness of it all is reflecting, you know, the lack of awareness of the journalists themselves. Many of them are completely uninformed about the world. They have opinions that have no factual basis to them, but it doesn't stop them because it's what looks good that matters more than what really is true.
The truth is that America has its own social, economic, and political challenges to be dealing with. And while Washington works on getting its own house in order, powerful mass media outlets can work on getting their facts straight. Marina Portnaya, RT, New York.
Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome everyone. Now let's go over and hear about a challenge to teaching, the truth about public education today. Of course, there are exceptions. There are exceptional teachers. There are exceptional students. There are exceptional parents of those students. But then we have the majority. And this is really the story about the majority.
Let's talk about education. In most Western countries, school is compulsory and state-enforced. Truancy can result in fines or even jail time for parents. This isn't just a result of state coercion. On a cultural level, education holds a sacred status much like that of religion. This is an institution that most never question, and that's a problem. Did you ever wonder how it is that kids spend 13 years from kindergarten to high school supposedly being prepared for life, yet when they get out, they don't have any real skills? 13 years and kids aren't taught how to grow a garden, how to build a house, how to fix a car, how to balance a checkbook, or how to cook a healthy meal. 13 years and kids come out without even rudimentary concepts of how to organize or lead groups of people, without even a glimmer of understanding of how to resolve conflicts nonviolently. And we call this an education? Yes, we're taught how to read and write and to perform some basic math, but we aren't taught how to think for ourselves. We aren't taught the principles of logic or how to question an ideology. What we are taught is how to sit at a desk and listen obediently as the world is packaged into a neat little box that we are to accept without question. We're taught to regurgitate that information for tests, to give the answer that those in authority demand. But most of all, we're conditioned to conform. And the reward for faithfully jumping through all of these hoops for 13 years is a worthless piece of paper that no employer even asked to see. Kids exit high school barely qualified to flip burgers at McDonald's. And even for that, they have to be trained. 13 years is a long time. That's most of our childhood. To have this much time taken by force with such pathetic results is unacceptable. The problem here isn't a lack of funding. The problem here isn't poorly trained teachers, lax regulations, or low-quality curriculum. The problem is our entire educational paradigm. The system isn't designed to prepare children for the real world. It's designed to format their minds and condition them for a life of subservience. It's designed to create a population of individuals just smart enough to fill out paperwork and punch a time card, but too stupid to question the system itself or the authority of those running it. If we want to change course, we cannot ignore this aspect of our enslavement. There's no point laboring to wake up other adults in our lives if we send our children to be programmed by the state. The revolution of the mind must include a revolution in education.
I agree. Now we're going to go over, and I want you to hear this little piece on 9/11 from a woman who worked in the Pentagon, what she observed.
On September 11, 2001, I had returned back from maternity leave. I had to get Elijah situated in daycare. I walked into the building. I had to clear Elijah to go to the area. There were some things that they wanted me to take care of prior to me taking him to the daycare. I sat down at the computer to actually turn the computer on. As soon as I pressed the button, boom. So at that particular time, based off what happened, I thought I had triggered a bomb. I was covered from my neck all the way down to my back in debris. My son was completely blown out of his stroller, and some of the floors had collapsed within, and people were trapped in between the floors. My son had stopped crying, so I felt strength out of nowhere to actually low crawl from out under the debris to try to find my son. But because there were so many people in that area, whether they were screaming or, you know, crying or saying, help me, save me, I felt pretty much divided. I didn't know if to help them first or to try to find my son. But I had tried to lift some of the debris to find my son, and I wasn't able to locate him, so I helped the other people with the thought that they would help me find my son. But due to all the hysteria, they just wanted to get out. There was an area where there was a pack of debris. We climbed over it, and in one last effort, I had reached down while there were two people holding my arm. I had reached down under a pack of debris and pulled my son up by his onesie, which is a T-shirt that snapped in between a child's leg. I put him over my shoulder and proceeded to get out of that particular location that had collapsed. And I came out in what is believed to be the entrance or the place of initial impact and was placed on the lawn that was closest to the highway prior to be transported to the hospital on that particular day. While I was coming out of the Pentagon, I didn't see any evidence of metal, airplane seats, you know, luggage, nothing that would give me any indication that it was a plane that had hit the building. I lost one shoe, so I was walking through the area barefooted. So I was particularly careful to try to make sure I did not step on anything sharp while I had my son on my shoulder. I did not have jet fuel over my body. My son didn't have jet fuel over his body. The people that I helped didn't have jet fuel on their body. So again, there was nothing on the inside that would give me any indication that there was a plane on that particular day that hit the building. Most of the people that were in the area where I was located, and again, I did ask because I, maybe I was off in my judgment, but in speaking with everyone, it was conclusive that no one else in the area where I was located had seen any parts of planes or luggage or baggage or anything of that nature. Yes, I believe it's something part of much more sinister, and that's why my goal is to try to push for a federal grand jury so that people can be brought forth for perjury and obstruction of justice. I mean, when you go out of your way to fabricate an official story, when obviously the evidence that appears, whether it's footage or the work that many people have done, shows that the official story couldn't possibly be true, then yes, you should be brought to justice. And when people can come together and feel like they can utilize, you know, human beings as lambs to a slaughter, yes, that's what's unpatriotic. That's what's un-American. We'll turn our own people to sacrifice them for whatever their motive may be, regardless that their motive is of no significance, but the fact that they would use, innocent human beings as lambs to a slaughter to perpetrate whatever it is their cause or motive is. Yes, they should be brought to justice, and it's obvious, you know, that the official story is it has been fabricated, pretty much.
She was there firsthand. We've also heard from a reporter who was there firsthand, walked into the building at the point where the hole was. Now, there have been hundreds of scientists, physicists, pilots who say that no airplane could have made the moves to have gotten there and done that impact. It's not humanly possible. But there is a video, and I saw the video yesterday. There is no way that video was a plane. Was it a missile? Could have been, but a plane? Because just look at it this way. Let's say that you have 140 feet from one tip of an airplane to the other wing, and then you have a height of the airplane. Well, where exactly when you hit, going at, let's say, 540 miles an hour, and you hit a structure, your wings are going to go into the structure. Your fuselage are going to go into the structure. They're hanging below. You're going to have the entrance where the pilot is, which sits higher. All that's going to make a specific indentation of how far it goes into the building depends upon the resistance factor of the building and the physics of the building, whether it's steel, whether it's reinforced steel or concrete or some of the materials. But the least you're going to have is you're going to have an outline, right? If you punch some, let's say, some sheetrock, and you knock your hand through it, you can go over there and look and see what you did, because you're going to see how big your fist was, the power of your fist going through, and it'll make a hole. So you should have had wing indentations in the Pentagon. There's none. The height of a plane that's coming in, since the hole was literally at ground level, that meant that the plane would have to be literally on the ground when it hit. Well, then how high was the plane and how big is the hole? Turns out the hole is smaller than any plane that would have done that. Well, how's that possible? That goes against the laws of physics. And where's the damage? You had had sheared wings. Where's your wings? The wings would not have microcrystallized. Where's it at? There was no fire on either of those sides, but there was fire inside. So what we know is that the official version is incorrect. We do not know what happened. We're merely examining pieces of the puzzle, which is the only responsible and reasonable way of doing it. So just another piece of the puzzle today. For those of you who don't think the public has been conditioned by the media, and the media has been conditioned by who gives it its messages, listen to this clip. It's only 60 seconds from Conan O'Brien.
Big news stories today are the snowstorm that's hitting the Midwest or the looming federal budget cuts. But judging by local news, there's apparently an even bigger story that's sweeping the nation right now. Check it out.
Well, if you filled up your gas tank lately, then you don't need us to tell you that gas prices are back on the rise.
You don't need us to tell you that gas prices are back on the rise.
You don't need us to tell you that gas prices are back on the rise.
You don't need us to tell you that gas prices are back on the rise.
You don't need us to tell you that gas prices are back on the rise.
You don't need us to tell you that gas prices are back on the rise.
You don't need us to tell you that gas prices are back on the rise.
You don't need us to tell you that gas prices are back on the rise.
You don't need us to tell you gas prices are back on the rise.
You don't need us to tell you that gas prices are back on the rise.
You don't need us to tell you that gas prices are back on the rise.
You don't need us to tell you gas prices are back on the rise.
You don't need us to tell you that gas prices are back on the rise.
You don't need us to tell you gas prices are on the rise. I know.
Okay, well, there is just a simple example of someone who wrote a clip, but no media challenged it. Now, what if those same people, instead of being local stations' news forecasters, said, and Gaddafi has weapons of mass destruction, and then another, Gaddafi has weapons of mass destruction, and another, Gaddafi has weapons of mass destruction, he's killing his own citizens, he's killing his own citizens, he's killing his own citizens, and Saddam Hussein has a sarin gas, and what you start seeing, when they're demonizing anyone, everyone's on board with the same talking points, which meant that the talking points were written by an individual within a group who had an agenda, who's never identified. We're led to believe that the people giving us the story had the resources to do their own independent verification of the facts. And that's why today, the only 7% of the American public trust the media. 93% don't. What's wrong with the other 7%? Just look at how manipulative is the media, who controls it, and then take a look at all the stories the media has promoted that were false. How about Libya? How about Syria? How about Assad using gas against his own citizens? It never happened. But look at Seymour Hersh, the only journalist who had the courage to tell the truth and find the truth, and you'll find it was Saudi Arabia and Turkey and Qatar and Oman and the other Arab countries that wanted to get rid of Gaddafi and the United States and Great Britain and France. So that's why when you start hearing the same construct, the same talking points, whether it's left or right, then you know you're being propagandized. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.
Shake it up.